So welcome, everyone. It is really an honor to be back. I'm subbing for the new daddy, the Abba, Rabbi Andrews, who is on a little bit of a leave of absence due to his wonderful little guy's birth and bris. And we want to wish Rabbi Andrews and all the community of Allentown a big mazel tov in this wonderful, wonderful occasion. And so I'm going to try my best to sub for Rabbi Andrews, and then we'll figure out a plan, as I say, going weiter, going onward, to see when Rabbi Andrews can be back and hosting one of our Monday night shiurim, one of our Monday night classes. And again, I want to thank Rabbi Friedman for being the host. Thank you, Rabbi. So tonight's class is called Camelot. And I wanted to explore with you tonight the defining characteristic of what it means to be a Jew. So much so that if you lack this midah, this attribute, you are literally canceled out. You know, they speak about cancel culture today. Well, Hashem had his own cancel culture. And if you are not someone who is an owner of chesed, if you don't perform kindness for others, you're not welcome. What's my proof? That the nefarious families of Ammon and Moab, although we shouldn't say nefarious because obviously there were individuals from Moab and Ammon who were really wonderful people. We won't mention Rus and Naamah in that type of negative vein. But in a positive way, if a Ger Tzedek, a righteous convert, converts from the tribe of Moab or the tribe of Ammon, it says that they are not permitted to actually marry a born Jew, Gam Dor Asiri, even 10 generations removed from the conversion. It says, Ammoni o Moavi lo yavo bikal Hashem. They're just verboten. Why? Because they lacked this basic chesed gene. They have a genetic flaw, and the genetic flaw means they would not help the Jewish people on our way past their territories, on our way to conquer the land of Israel. Because of this defective chesed lacking gene, they are excluded forever from being part of the tribes of Israel. Abraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu, Abraham and Sarah, of course, are the quintessential purveyors of chesed, of kindness. It's the defining midah that we know Avraham Avinu by. So I want to explore what chesed's about and the possibility that not every form of chesed is necessarily benign and good. So let's talk about the most disastrous moment in Avraham Avinu's life, the most painful moment. Now you're all thinking the Akedas Yitzchak, the binding of Isaac. Well, you can make that argument, but Baruch Hashem, thank God it had a happy ending, except for the lovers of sheep and rams. Had a very happy ending last week in Parshas Vayera. But there was a moment that really was never fixed. You know where that moment was back in Lech Lecha? When Lot, his adoptive son, nephew of his older brother Haran, younger brother Haran, rather, when Lot, his Talmud, his student, chose to leave, he pared na me'alai, Abraham said, we can't be stealing land and arable soil and food from the Canaanites right now. I'm sorry. You, Lot, either have to muzzle the Shipala or choose somewhere else to live. And of course, he infamously chose Sodom and Gomorrah to move to Sodom and Gomorrah. And why that was so devastating is, on a personal level, clearly to lose your progeny, to lose Lot, that he would literally desert you. That was very painful on a local level. But on a more universal level, that was a shot to the side of the HMS Avraham Avinu. Because you can imagine that when Lot divests himself of Avraham, of Abraham and Sarah, what does that say to the followers of Abraham? To the Nefesh Asher Asu B'Charan, to his thousands and thousands of followers, when his own flesh and blood deserts and goes to Sodom and Gomorrah. It was a shattering moment. And it really never was fully repaired and restored until, of course, Ruth comes back in the story of Megillas Rus with Boaz. But that's not the entirety of the family. So Lot really doesn't return. And that was a shattering moment. And the rabbis say, what was the issue at hand? And it was not deliberate, Chas v'Shalom. So please, this is not a criticism of Abraham. But Lot felt diminished by Abraham. How do we know this? One word. It says that in the aftermath of their return from Egypt, both Abraham and Lot are now very wealthy individuals. Their stock portfolio. When we speak of stock portfolio, we're not talking about the Dow Jones today going up 800. We're mamash talking about the stock, portfolio. Back then it was literal, you know, animals, behemoth in that. So you had a real stock market back then. It wasn't simply a metaphor. So the stock portfolio of Loden Abraham went off the charts. The Dow Jones and S&P was great, except that for Lot, he couldn't accept always being number two. How do we know this? Because it says, V'gam l'Lot, and also to Lot, who went with Abraham, he had all this money. He didn't want to be V'gam l'Lot. Lot didn't want to be Robin to Abraham's Batman. I mean, who would want to wear that silly suit? I think Robin's probably the least effective superhero ever. And Lot didn't want to be Robin anymore. He wanted to wear and use some of the really cool tech, you know, that Bruce Wayne gets to use at night as the Batman. And he said, that's it. I don't want to be submerged within Abraham's world. Now, how do we know this is such an issue? Think of this amazing moment. The angels come, and they're pulling out Lot and his family from the destruction. They're literally rescuing the guy, and they're saying, let's take you back to Abraham. And you know what Lot's response was? Hahara? I will not go to the mountain. The rabbis say the word mountain there was an allusion to Abraham, to return to Abraham, his uncle. He said, no, I'd rather die. I will not go back to Abraham. I can't be subsumed within the world of Abraham. Now, obviously, what does that mean? There's many different takeaways. I'll share a simplistic one with you. That perhaps Abraham's and Sarah's overwhelming chesed, the kindness that he did for the world, it subsumed Lot and his persona within the tent of Abraham and Sarah. He didn't have his own individual identity. Whether that was real or only in the mind of Lot, we're not sure. But clearly it's an issue. Now that issue doesn't remain an issue for long, because then you have the moment in last week's Parsha that we just read on Shabbat, Parshas Vayera, where we are privy to the greatness of the chesed of Abraham. So let's examine this story, because you were all in shul, or you know the story very well. So the angels, the three angels, come to Abraham and Sarah, third day after the bris milah of Abraham, age 99. He's not feeling well. It's 196 degrees. They had climate change even back then, apparently. And Abraham is very upset because there aren't any guests to host. His achnasas orchim, his desire to host guests, was so strong that the 196-degree heat wave precluded any human being coming out. So instead of Hashem doing the simple thing, what would the simple answer be? Turn the thermostat down, and then some human beings could be out on the road, and Abraham could host people. No, no, no. Hashem doesn't send humans. He sends angels in the guise of humans. They come to Abraham, and he goes crazy, runs to them, washes their feet, cleans them from idolatry, brings them into the tent after ascertaining that they're good people, seeing them do kindness to one another and respect. And then he gives them the best meal ever, right? He shechs cows, they get tongue and mustard and all this delicious, delicious shmorg. And the angels sit, and in honor of Abraham and Sarah, they eat. Perhaps the only time in angelic history where the angels actually eat food. It's a debate whether they really ate or did not eat. But I want you to think about something, okay? Let's have a little fun here. After the angels have departed, they've identified themselves as angels. You're going to have Isaac, and then you have the Sodom and Gomorrah saga, and they leave Abraham to go to Sodom and Gomorrah to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah and rescue Lot and his family, and the other angel ostensibly goes back to heaven because he's cured Abraham from his infirmity, from the bris, the pain of the circumcision. So Abraham and Sarah are kicking back, and Abraham is still, you know, very tired. It's been a workout, 196-degree day, as we said. And he's been running around like a madman, standing over the guests. And then he turns to Sarah. I'm just pretending this is a dialogue. Please, this is not kfira. It's not apikorsis. It's not heresy that I'm sharing with you. I'm just having a little fun. And he probably turns to Sarah, and Sarah turns to him, and he says, Sarah, what were we thinking? And Sarah says, what do you mean? Well, here you cooked up the greatest suda, the greatest meal ever, and I was like a madman, shechting and preparing and salting and everything kosher. I had to have that, be the mashkiach. And we were giving food to these people, but they weren't people. What were we doing? What was the point? It was a big waste of time. Probably, as we were serving the food, they were reaching down like the little children sometimes do and taking the hamburger meat and putting it under their table and giving it to the dogs. They're not even eating what we're giving them. So here we think we're such hot stuff. We're giving them hachanasas orchim. We're hosting them and giving them hospitality. And at the end of the day, it's a big fake out. It's not real. Which, by the way, keeps in line with the Parsha, because what's the Parsha called? Appearances. Vayera. The whole Parsha is all about how things seem. So what was the lesson that Hashem was teaching Avraham and Sarah? It's a very profound lesson that we all know. But Avraham and Sarah learned it firsthand. And remember, this is not a small issue. Because outside of the Midrash, the oral tradition, there isn't another place in the Torah where we see firsthand the greatness of Avraham and Sarah as people who had this quality of chesed, of kindness. It's alluded to in Midrashim and other liturgy, yes, but not literally in the Torah. Only here in Parshas Vayera. So what is the point? I think the takeaway is very simple. What is chesed all about? Chesed is not about the reality. It's about what we see. Vayera, what appears to us. In other words, if we see a need, if we believe that there is a poor person or a stranger or someone who's lacking something, and we step into the void, then we are a shutef, a partner with God, and with Hashem has specifically allowed us the honor of helping this individual. And whether or not the individual benefits ultimately, that's really irrelevant. It's that we cared and are sensitive to the moment, and we tried our best to step into the void and to help someone. That chesed, not only is it not really for the other person, although of course the other person will hopefully benefit, except in the case of the angels, where they actually did not benefit. What is the chesed for? It's for us. It's for us. As it says in Megillas Rus, when you do something for somebody else, it's an honor. Yaisir memasha balabais osila ani, ha'ani osil bishvila balabais. More than what the owner of the home does by supplying food to the poor person gives back 100 times more to the homeowner. Because what is the homeowner out? Some challah, piece of chicken, some kugel. But in return, what does the homeowner benefit? Eternity. Olam haba. Everything. So this is the nature of chesed. So we have seen now, we've explored the Avraham chesed, the Sarah chesed, maybe some of the issues that we have to be careful that would happen with Lot, that when we do chesed for somebody, we don't want to subsume the person within us. We want to give the person space and their own identity. So these are issues that are very real, but they're not the focus of tonight, because tonight it's all about Camelot. So let's proceed with Chayesar. So let's hear the story. Avraham Avinu, Abraham, has a young man named Isaac, Yitzchak, and unfortunately there isn't Frimster or J-Date or Sayu at Sinai yet. So when you want to do a Shidduch, you got to send your trusty servant Eliezer. So Eliezer, Damasik Eliezer, is sent on this amazing mission. But it's a pretty daunting task because it's a big world out there, and there are a finite amount of candidates that are going to be Mrs. Right. So Yitzchak is the guy, right? He's our father, so you got to get the right woman for him. So Avraham Avinu takes Eliezer and says, look, I love you, Eliezer. You know the whole Torah. You're my greatest student now, but you have to swear to me a shavua, a solemn oath that you will not go to any of the Canaanite families. You go to my family first. Go back to Haran, go to Aram Naharaim. From there, Hashem should help you find the right young lady. So Eliezer goes, and he appears with 10 camels, and he comes to the Be'er, to the well. And think about it, by the way, this is not a joke. If you ever in the Torah want to meet your Besheret, your mate, you go to the well, because all the great people met their mates by the well. You think about it. Eliezer, Rivka, Rachel, Jacob, Moshe meets Zipporah, etc., etc. So the well apparently was maybe they had a little bar, a little restaurant there, I'm not sure. But that was the place where you had your first date, okay? And we are told that Rivka was drawn out to be at that well at that moment. She's a young lady. She's kind of like the unofficial princess of the town because her father, Besuel, is a wicked guy, but he also kind of commands the town of Aram Naharaim. And so Rivka had never really been a serving person all her life. And here she's supposed to come out and water some sheep or water some camels or just, she came out just to see what she could do because Hashem drew her forth. An angel of Hashem draws her out that she should meet her destiny at the well. So Eliezer shows up and Eliezer makes an insane request of God. And Hashem only takes Eliezer seriously because of his love for Avraham and his love for Yitzchak. So what does Eliezer say? He says, God, look, my soul's on the line here. I don't know which is the girl. How do I know? This is a very, very tough assignment that I'm on. So please, you got to show me something. Show me that the girl I'm going to choose is deserving to carry the mantle as the second of the imahos, the second of the matriarchs. How so? Eliezer says, if she, this young lady, will come to me now and see me, the stranger, at the well, and offers me something to drink and maybe, you know, something to take care of me, that will show that this is a young lady in the tradition of Abraham and Sarah, that she's someone who could do a chesed, kindness, and that should be the girl that is destined to marry Isaac. No sooner had Eliezer said out loud this sort of challenge to God, this challenge to Hashem, and Rivka comes out, and she comes to the well, and she sees Eliezer standing there. And she runs to Eliezer, says, stranger, you know, can I help you? How about I give you something to drink for you, for your men, for your camels? Absolutely. Eliezer is just standing there, and he's watching. Okay. So let me read to you the words from the Chumash, okay? This is beautiful. So Eliezer has made a promise to God. Bing, bang, instantly, instantaneously, you know, the bakasha, the request from God is answered maybe. The young girl comes, and it's looking good, right? Because she looks like she showed up out of the blue, maybe in response to his request from God. And she's asking him about who he is and what he needs. So that's looking good so far. So he is just watching to see what she will do. Will she be someone who performs a chesed or not, a kindness or not? So the man stood there gazing at her. Eliezer is just staring at Rivka. But he remained silent. He didn't say a word, waiting to determine for certain whether or not Hashem had made his journey successful. Yitzliach darko imlo. So what happens? Listen to this. When the camels had finished drinking, Eliezer took a gold ring weighing half a shekel, two gold bracelets weighing 10 gold shekels for her arms. And he said to her, whose daughter are you? And Rivka, and then he says, and by the way, if you would tell me, Eliezer adds a second question, tell me if there is a place, Lalun. Is there a place in your father's house for me, for us, my men and I, my animals, to spend the night? Rivka, Rebecca, the young girl, replies. She replied, first on the first part, second on the second part. I am the daughter of Bisuel, son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor. And then she goes on to say, yes, there's a place for you and your animals to sleep. Okay. Famous, famous story. Okay. Listen to this. Eliezer did something you may not have noticed because I read it for you without using the screen sharing. Okay? But I'll read it again carefully. He did something absurd. First, the Torah tells us that he is dying to find out if Hashem made his journey successful. He has just davened to Hashem, please help me. Hashem has potentially answered his prayer with an instant appearance of the young lady, but he doesn't know who the young lady is. It's not definitive. It's not 100%. So it says, Vayish nishtayelo. He is like dying to find out whether or not Hashem has helped him. What's the question that Eliezer needs to ask at this point? It's just three little words, by the way. Bas, me, at. Whose daughter are you? In other words, it's looking 95% perfect. But there's a little bit of a doubt. There's a suffix. All he has to do is ensure that, yes, in fact, she is from Abraham's family, which, of course, she is. And she says to him, I am daughter Bisuel, Nahor, whom Milcah bore to him, so we're mishpacha of Abraham and Isaac. So it's perfect. But what does he not do? He doesn't ask her the question until after he marries her for Isaac. I'll say it again. He doesn't ask the question, three words. He doesn't ask. He just takes out the ring, and that ring is kiddushin. For any of you who have learned some of the laws of marriage, they used to have two separate components, which are both part of marriage. We now do these two items under the chuppah, right? We have the ring, which is erisin, that's the engagement, quote unquote. And then we have the nisuin, the actual formality of fixing the marriage under the chuppah. So the chuppah acts like it's nisuin. So there's two components to marriage that we do simultaneously under the chuppah. Erisin, the engagement process, followed by the chuppah. Now, in days of yore, many moons ago, they separated these two processes. One would be erisin, the young girl, usually she was very young, would be engaged, and then they had months and months and months before they would consummate the marriage with the chuppah. They would separate the two. It's hard for us in 2020 to connect with that old minhag, but that was really the way it was performed for many, many, many generations. So what does Eliezer do? He has full federal express powers. He is the shaliach. He is the official emissary of Isaac. So he, shluchei Adam kemoso, it says, that the emissary, the shaliach, empowered by somebody to do a certain mission, is the representative and de facto the person himself. A shaliach, a messenger, has the power to actually marry someone for someone else. This was the awesome power that was bestowed upon Eliezer. So when Eliezer takes the ring and hands it to this young lady, he doesn't know her name, he doesn't know her genealogy, he just says, "Here you go, sweetheart, marry me." And then after the fact, he says, "Please tell me, Basmiat, whose daughter are you?" He's probably thinking, "Oh my gosh, boy, I really jumped into this one." And then she says, "Oh, I'm related to Avram." He's like, "Baruch Hashem, everything's okay." Now, this is insane. It's such an issue. Ready for this? Eliezer has to tell a lie later to the family of Rivka when he reports what happened at the well. He goes over the story almost word for word, but he lies. He literally lies. He turns around the events so he won't look like an absolute insane, crazy man. Okay? Listen to how Eliezer now reports to the family of Rivka to get their permission, their license to marry, that Rivka should, in fact, go away and marry. She's already halachically married, you know. They are, by Torah law, married, but that they should get permission from the family. So listen to what he says. So Eliezer says to Lavan and to Besuel, "She, the young lady, immediately lowered her jug and said, 'Drink. I will also water your camels.' So I took a drink," Eliezer says, "and she also gave the camels water. I questioned her, and I asked, 'Whose daughter are you?' She replied, 'I am a daughter of Besuel, son of Nahor, whom Milcah bore to him.' I then placed a ring on her nose and bracelets on her arms." He lied. He literally changed the events. Because I showed you inside the actual narrative, as the events are reported to us in the Chumash, he did not say Basmi At until after he gives her the ring. So first he betroths her, then and only then does he say, "Who are you?" But when he reports the events to Rivka's family to get Rishus, to get permission to take Rivka away, he literally changes it up and just says, "Oh, by the way, of course I asked, 'Who are you?' to ascertain her identity. And then and only then did I betroth her for my master Yitzchak." And Rashi says this. He outright lied. Wow. So what's going on? So here's the question. What caused Eliezer to do what he did? It's so insane when you look at it, not to just throw out three little words to seal the deal, that it's 100% metaphysical certitude, that this is the right lady. He can't do that. Why not? There's only one possible answer. You know what the answer is? He already knew who it was. He had 100% certainty that this was the right girl. He didn't need to ask. Well, what happened? He didn't really ask, so how does he know? So let's examine a little more carefully, please, the text of the original narrative describing how Rebecca offers the water and then he gives the ring. Okay? Listen very carefully. "The man stood there gazing at her, but he remained silent. Mishta'el aladas, waiting to determine for certain whether or not Hashem has made his journey successful." Okay, stop. So far, he is waiting with bated breath, watching with amazement as Rebecca goes back and forth watering 10 camels. And by the way, there's a whole cheshbon, if you read Rabbi Artscroll, Lakota Shlita, he gives a whole, you know, how many gallons of water a empty camel, a gamal, would drink. And then he tries to calculate how many hundreds of gallons of water that little Rebecca had to schlep up and down from the well, the bucket, and back and forth. So we're talking hours where this little girl has to involve herself in taking care of the camels. All right? So far, she hasn't said word one to him other than offering drink to he, his men, and the camels. And then it says, when the camels had finished drinking, he took a gold ring and he marries her. So the only thing that happens, narratively, in the text of the Chumash, between wanting to know who she is, 100%, and then marrying her for Isaac, just one phrase, kilu lishtot, when the camels had completed their drinking. Camelot, when they had drunk a lot. Well, that's not really why it's called Camelot, I'll just see in a moment. But the camels had finished drinking. Kilu lishtot. This is it. This is the moment that Rebecca becomes Rebecca Imenu, Rivka, our mother. This is the moment that Eliezer is so certain that this is the right lady that he doesn't even need to ask. It's a foregone conclusion. It's just an after fact. So what happened? You see, when Rivka offered what she offered to Eliezer, what did she offer? She said, I'll give a little bit to drink to you and your men and the camels. Lishtot, to drink. She never said, until they have had their fill. No. She offered water. But in reality, what did she supply the camels with? Until they were sated. Full capacity, right? The gas tanks were on empty. They were up to F. $2.50 or so, $2.50 a gallon of water, whatever it was. It was good. It was a good deal. So the water tanks in the camels are full. But Rebecca never offered to fill the tanks. She said, I'll give them a little bit to drink. This, my friends, is why Rebecca is Rebecca and why Eliezer doesn't need to ask. Because she just showed something to him that's never been done in the history of the world. It's the first time it's ever been done. You want to hear what it is? It's called a chesed. It's a form of a kindness. But what type of kindness is it? It's the greatest kindness that a person can do. When we do a kindness for somebody, we retain ownership over the person. I'll give you an illustration. My son reminded me of the famous adage, right, that you give a fish to a poor person, he has a meal for a day. You teach the poor person to fish, he will have meals for his lifetime. That was from my son, Tully. He said, I gotta get it in the class. So, Tully, if you're listening, you're in. So, and that's true, right? But what if Rebecca, who only offered water, a little bit of water to drink, what if she had actually only given a little bit of water? Of course that's a chesed. It's a kindness. But then if Rebecca only offered a little bit of water, she's retaining the ownership over the good action that she's doing. Meaning, it's not enough for Eliezer and the camels to cease and desist and go away. They only have a limited amount of water supply, both he, his men, and the camels specifically. But once you water the camels, kilu lishtos, until the water tank is on full, you know what Eliezer could have said to Rebecca? Thank you, my dear. I appreciate your kindness. Bye. See ya. He's done. His camels now can travel for weeks, right? They call them the ships of the desert because once they are sated with water, you give them a full tank of water, camels go for weeks. So in other words, Rebecca didn't just do a kindness. She relinquished ownership, if you will, over the kindness. Very often in life, when a person does a kindness, they dole it out. You know, the way the government does, right? They won't give you sort of everything you need. You got to show up Monday morning or every single day at the food line to get whatever it is they're giving you. And again, don't get me wrong. It's wonderful. It's still a chesed. It's still tzedakah. It's still charity. But it comes with strings attached. Meaning, we are beholden to the person or entity that is continuing to supply us with the chesed, with the kindness. That's normal kindness. What Rebecca did is so unique that when Eliezer took it in, he was so flabbergasted, he knew for sure, oh my gosh, if Rebecca is capable of this type of act, of course she has to come from Abraham and Sarah's family. It cannot be that she's not a member of Abraham and Sarah's family. Because what type of action did she perform? When you perform an action of chesed, You know what we call it? You are a gomel chesed, someone who performs, a gomel. You know the word gomel means? Gimel, mem, lamed. You know what a gamal is? A camel. It's the same word. So my Rebbe, Rabbi Weinberg, explains that the two words are interrelated. A gomel chesed, someone who does an act of kindness, is emulating the action of the camels. This is not an issue. I know it sounds, oh my gosh, Rabbi Kaplan's really lost it. No, it's called Camelot for a very specific reason. Our parsha contains the majority of mentions of the word camel more than any other time cumulatively in the entire Tanakh, in the 24 books of the Torah. Okay, I'll just read you a couple of them, okay? They're right here on this page. There's like 17 times in our parsha where it could have used a pronoun, an it or a they, and it goes back over and over and over to use the word camel. The servant then took 10 camels from his master's camels. He arrived, he let the camels rest on their knees. She replies, drink, I will also water your camels. She said, let me draw waters for your camels so they can drink their fill. She drew water for all his camels. When the camels had finished drinking, he came to the man who was still standing beside the camels. I have cleaned the house and prepared a place for the camels. He unmuzzled the camels. He gave the camels straw and fodder. God granted him sheep, cattle, blah, 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 camels. It's over and over. You'll see, you'll go through the Parsha and Shabbos, you will be floored. It's almost like Hashem is implanting this word, this thematic element of Gamal, to teach us the nature of how you do kindness. In other words, Abraham and Sarah's kindness was off the charts. Rivka has created, with her action, the definitive type of kindness, where you ascribe to the one who is the beneficiary otherness. I am making the other person independent of me. I am not retaining ownership anymore. I'm not saying to this person, I'll give you $10 every morning. Show up at Minyan. After Minyan's over, you'll get a $10 from me. So for your daily supplies of food. No. I am, as Rivka did, doing a chesed, a gomel chesed, a gamal chesed, the kindness of the camels. I am literally giving up ownership over you. In other words, I don't want you to be reliant on me. I'm giving you your own unique identity and otherness. And this is what Eliezer saw Rebecca do. So, of course, how could he possibly explain to Rebecca's family why he would do an insane action? In other words, you can't explain to Laban Harasha, to the wicked Laban Besuel, who's even maybe a bigger wicked guy, how is he going to explain to these wicked people, oh, by the way, this isn't Judaism, I got Gimelus Chassid, and I saw your sister, your daughter, and she did this and this, therefore it's clear to me the nature of who Rebecca is, so therefore I didn't need to ask. They're going to look at him as if he's an alien, as if he's nuts. So obviously he has to lie to them, and he flips the events and says, no, of course I said, who are you? And then and only then did I marry her for Yitzchak. But in reality, her action, that was it. He didn't need to know. He knew that this has to be the one. Who else could it be that could create this unique type of chesed? And by the way, she marries the only person in the Torah, and this is kind of humorous, I hope you'll see the humor here, that becomes a camel. There's one person in the Torah who became a camel. I know you're thinking, wait a minute, you've seen a little too much Disney, maybe Shrek. No. Isaac becomes a camel. And you'll understand when I quote you the actual text, you'll see the interplay. It's beautiful. Listen to this. When Isaac grows up, and this is in last week's parsha by Yera, it says the child Isaac grew, and when he was 2 years old, he was weaned. Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. You know what the word is for weaning? Gamal. Vayigdal hayeled vayigamal. And he became a gamal. Vayas Avraham mishte gadol. Abraham made a great feast. Beyom higamel. On the day that he made weaned Isaac. Now what does it mean to be weaned from mother? This is exactly what we're saying, right? When a child is weaned from the mother, what does a child now have? Otherness. They don't need to rely on mom to supply their food and their life, right? Once a person is weaned off of a need, then they're independent. This is the greatest form of chesed in the world, of kindness in the world. When we can ascribe to the other person, the beneficiary, their own persona, their own otherness from me. I am not retaining ownership over the action. I'm giving it to you the way Rebecca gave it to Eliezer by the well. And she's saying, okay, you know what? I filled the camels to maximum capacity. What you do next doesn't matter to me at all. And Eliezer says, now, wait a minute. If you are capable of a gemilus chassidim, of the world's first reported true camel chesed, then I'm going to jump in with you, sweetheart, and I'm going to marry you for Isaac. I don't need to know by asking. It's just not necessary. If you're capable of this, young lady, then I'm going to go in with you, partner. And so Eliezer jumps right in and marries her for Isaac because he sees the courage and the greatness of this young soul, Rebecca, in front of him. So just to end tonight, we know, of course, that it says in Pirkei Avos, Al Shalsha Devarim Ha'olam Omed, that the world stands on three things, Al HaTorah, on the learning of Torah, Torah study, Al Avodah, service to Hashem, could be prayer or sacrifice, and what's the big one? The Al Gemilut Chasatim, and on the acts of loving kindness. And forever now, we'll think of the Camelot, of all those camels in our parsha, and how Hashem is taking that word, and the play of what it means to be a camel. Specifically, that a camel means to be weaned, and that is the nature of a gomel chesed. Should be that we should be zocha to many, many opportunities that Hashem should throw our way to become like Rebecca, like Rivka, step up, and to describe otherness, and to do something meaningful, but to allow the other individual their dignity and their honor.